from Age UK.
The Wireless.
Hello and welcome. It's Jenny Carr with the Silver Travel Show on the wireless from Age UK, in partnership with Silver Travel Advisor, the travel review and information website for travellers aged over 50. Today we're going to be hearing about holidays for a reason. Clearly, we're all after a change of scene, often fresh air, and perhaps the chance to try something new. Today I'm going to talk to Leonard Piercy about musical breaks, Clive Howard on historical tours, and John Harris, who teaches salsa and yoga. To my first guest, Sally Grayson from People and Places, about responsible volunteering abroad. Welcome, Sally.
Hi, Jenny.
Now, today we're talking about holidays for a reason. In this case, the reason is volunteering. In your experience, why do people volunteer to work abroad? I mean, it isn't much of a holiday, is it?
It's certainly not a holiday whilst the volunteer is working. People volunteer for many different reasons. Perhaps the most important is that people have visited countries, travelled, and lying on the beach or visiting the local sites isn't enough for them anymore. They want to engage with local people. And in all cases, there is a large degree of altruism and wanting to give something back,
which is so important. And I noticed that, you know, on your website, you mentioned that people have said, I want to be more involved than simply passing through.
We hear that. Probably that's what we hear the most, that people have travelled and just feel that they will learn more about a country and learn more for themselves and have that meaningful experience if they can work and live alongside local people, which they won't get being on organised tours, even the most open cultural tours.
Now, what sort of people have we got here? Are they all highly skilled? What sort of age group are they?
People volunteer from the age of 18 to 80. Our personal experience, our volunteers tend to be 70% of our volunteers are over the age of 50, probably closer to 75%. And we, as an organisation, specifically look for skills share transfer. But that skill doesn't have to be a professional skill. One of our most successful volunteers was a school caretaker over 50 who was very interested in bicycles and did amazing work with a community in South Africa, building a bicycle program, which is now a small business for the community and is also enabling people to move out of the village. And we added to that, the next volunteer after that was an engineer, and he worked on building trailers to go with the bicycles. So now people can, for example, can be taken in trailers on bicycles to hospital. Right. And we have youth in the community who know how to build and maintain those vehicles. We have gardeners. Of course, traditionally, we have teachers, business people, healthcare workers. But it's about skills and transferable skills.
And that's just such a lovely story, isn't it? Because actually, it is about teaching people to fish rather than giving them fish.
Absolutely.
And I know that's very much at the heart of what you're doing, isn't it? Now, what sort of projects do people get involved in? We've talked a little bit about the bicycles, but what other kinds of things?
In so many instances, it's education. But that isn't standing in a classroom teaching. It, because it's sharing skills, it could be with local community organisations, enabling them to work in IT or administration for business skill or marketing. Healthcare workers will work with local community carers, building their ability to nurse in the community. Particularly in places like South Africa, in the townships where there is no formal healthcare support. We have volunteers, excuse me, that work on building craft skills, marketing, building websites. Mm. The bicycle mechanic, the engineers. It's about skills.
Mm.
Gardeners, cooks.
Right.
Across the board.
So if you're prepared to have a go and transfer that skill, there's probably somewhere for it to be used.
Kate prides herself, my colleague who works with the volunteers, that the only volunteer whose skills she has not been able to use because he specifically wanted to use his professional skills was a forensic scientist.
Okay, I thought you were going to say a ballet dancer.
No, we could use ballet dancers in a large number of our projects.
I love it. Now, you know, here I am. I'm nearly 60. I'm thinking of retiring. Isn't it really scary heading off to a new place? You know, you're going to get seriously involved in a new way of life, perhaps somewhere you actually haven't been before. You've chosen to go somewhere a bit different as a volunteer and an unfamiliar culture. And of course, then there's the whole business of getting insurance and your own healthcare while you're there.
I think scary is probably too strong. I think it can be daunting.
Okay.
And I think most of us know that if we're presented with a situation that we know little about, we should do the research.
Mm.
So research is number one.
Mm.
Number two is make sure the people on the ground know how to look after you.
Right.
That they're reputable. Most grown-ups aren't instilled with confidence if the person looking after them on the ground is a young volunteer who was a volunteer themselves last year.
Right.
Ask the questions. If an organisation, a reputable organisation, should allow you to talk to previous volunteers.
For sure, yeah.
Make sure you talk to those previous volunteers. Keep asking the questions. We have a list of questions that we recommend that people ask whichever organisation they're thinking about travelling with, not just with us. Insurance and healthcare are big considerations. Scarily, many volunteer travellers will not realise that their normal travel insurance does not cover them for volunteering. We worked specifically with a volunteer, with an insurance company to cover our volunteers with insurance, because most travel policies will not insure a tourist for work,
right,
even if that's unpaid work.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly won't cover them for personal liability.
Oh.
So if they have an accident at their place of work, they are probably not insured unless they've asked the questions. Also, healthcare. In most of the communities where one goes to volunteer, they're vulnerable. This is not a beachside resort in the Bahamas. And so the big thing is ensuring that the people on the ground have done the appropriate risk analyses, have done all the emergency procedures, that those are in place, that they have the correct processes in place. And then the bottom line, you're insured when and if it does go wrong. We haven't had an instance. We've been placing volunteers since 2006, apart from a couple of volunteers who fell ill normally whilst they were working. We've not had any reason to put our emergency evacuation or our disaster process into action.
So we're all touching wood now, because that's a really good track record, isn't it? Now, I'm a bit of a sceptic. And given that I'm going for 4 weeks, you know, am I going to make a difference, Sally? Or is it just a bit tinkering around the edges?
I would say that you can make a difference if you travel with the right organisation.
Mm.
I think volunteers need to seriously question whether they can make a difference if they're replacing local employment
sure.
in that period of time.
Mm.
So I think volunteer educators should ask themselves if they're really leaving a legacy by standing in a classroom teaching that particular group of children. Where is the legacy if they're not sharing their skills with local teachers?
Mm.
Also, one of the most important things is to see that the sending organisation takes a responsibility to make that volunteer's placement part of a long-time program. We work very closely to development plans. We've worked very closely with the projects and know what the goal of our volunteer program is. One of the commitments we have from our volunteers when they return is that they will brief future volunteers, not only by writing a report, but actually talking to the next volunteers that will go after them. So in terms of the literacy programs, we've been working in South Africa Township since 2006, and the volunteers who returned, many of them return year after year, are seeing real differences and real skills where the local teachers are using creative methods and best practice methods here in their school that they didn't even know of when they first arrived. But that, it's very slow.
Sure.
You cannot make a difference in 1 month, but you can make a difference if you're part of a team committed to do it over a long period of time.
So lots of 1 months,
yes,
as it were. Perfect. Okay. Now, how do you actually find projects? And, you know, how do you guarantee their integrity? Because there is, you know, quite a lot of exploitation possible in this field, isn't there? I mean, we've talked about, you know, people actually setting up orphanages for the sole purpose of getting charitable donation, which, you know, makes one feel scandalised. But obviously you have to be realistic. So here we are, we've committed to going for 4 weeks. Now, I'm going to ask a lot of questions, but how do you as an organisation go about, or any organisation go about, actually finding out that these projects are really what they say they are?
We have quite a strict due diligence process, and we work with local partners. We consider we're unique in this, in that we created a model where we don't work directly with the projects as such. We identify local people who are already doing amazing work on the ground. Most of those are local tourism companies who are already working with projects. Some are larger NGOs working with smaller projects. Some are education departments in government education departments or health departments. And my role is to do due diligence with those people and meet with those people and ask all the questions that need to be asked about projects and set up the processes that continue to monitor where is the money going and is the, for example, an orphanage properly registered in the country? Do they have child protection policies? Are they conforming to those child protection policies? Then the other wonderful audit trail we have is the volunteers.
Of course.
When they come back to us and they raise the questions, and we encourage them to be very open with us about concerns. And because we have a very open relationship with our local partners, we're able to ask them questions, which they in turn can ask the projects, which may not be appropriate for us to ask.
Right. So it's a lot of questions, a lot of processes, and a lot of monitoring. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I think that sounds absolutely great. Now I'm going to be very frivolous. I don't want to do the gap year student thing, Sally, when I'm volunteering. I don't want to sleep on the floor at the back of the classroom with a nasty, grotty toilet. What are you going to say to me?
Completely with you, 100% on that. Absolutely with you. Some of the places I go to, I have to rough it. I can manage for 2 or 3 days. Then I want my comfort. One of the other things we've been able to do, because we work with local partners who tend to have tourism skills, many of our volunteers will say, I can't hack a month living in a community house with a drop loo and a cold shower. But I would love to experience that and be part of the community. We can build in most of our projects, there are some places that are too remote and we can't, but we can build in that they can escape for the weekend. Every weekend or every other weekend, a long weekend or whatever, and can have their gin and tonic and their hot shower and their hair dryer. And that's really important to us. We So we do have some young volunteers looking to volunteer during their gap year. That's not what we're about. We're looking for skills. Mm-hmm. And just because somebody wants a touch of luxury doesn't mean they wouldn't make a brilliant volunteer.
For sure. Absolutely. Yes, I did. A hot shower once a week, I don't think is too much to ask.
I don't think so either.
At a certain point. Now, very briefly, Sally, what's your favourite project?
I think I don't have a favourite project because they're all special in different ways and all challenging. But I think my heart's in the Gambia.
Right.
Because that's where we started People and Places.
Mm.
And where my first, before we started People and Places, where my first volunteer experience was. But I remember sitting in a garden in the Gambia and creating People and Places with my co-founder Harold and Kate. So I think the Gambia will always have a soft spot in my heart. But then I love Morocco and Nepal and India and the Gambia.
She's off. Now, I mean, that was brilliant. So lots of ideas if you'd like to give volunteering a go. Sally, thank you for joining me today. And I know there's some seriously interesting tales to tell and inspiring projects to work on. So have a look at People and Places, which can be found at www.travel-peopleandplaces.co.uk. Thank you, Sally.